Welcome back to The Garden Show. I'm Peggy Ballester-Howells, and we are ready for our Sports Minute. You go with our music, Jarrett. Welcome back. We're going to do our little sports minute today on lawn darts. Jared, did you ever play lawn darts?
I have not, no.
Well, apparently it was a game that was invented in the 1950s. And the original game had metal pointed spikes that were like 10 inches long and plastic wings. And you took the metal pointy thing was weighted, and you threw them underhanded, supposedly, into a circle, and the pointed part would, because it was weighted, would go down and land into the circle, and that was how you played. And it was fairly popular, and it came, you could buy the set separately, or they were also sold in packs of assorted lawn games. And it was popular and it was fun, but it was dangerous. And the sport was eliminated. It was kids were killed. The darts were heavy enough to penetrate people's skulls. And so they initially there was like an intermediate kind of ruling that there had to be warnings on the boxes, and then they were not to be sold as toys, and it was recommended that no one under 10 years old be able to play with the game. But eventually, due to, you know, the fact that kids were dying from it, not a lot but a few, the sport was completely banned. However, this is so weird. Why they would create a sport, ban the sport, and then they did not ban the sale of the component parts. Did you come across that information, Jared?
I'm looking at the an image gallery of different warning labels, and I'm finding the story on Snopes about the banning lawn darts. Goes back to actually 1987.
Yeah, when a father of a little girl who was killed, it was a really kind of a sad story that their kids were playing with it. It was one of those sets where four games had come in the box, and they had never actually played lawn darts. And one of the kids threw it and killed his sister. So
oof.
So that is a really bizarre sport activity, but they were still available on occasion. For sale at like yard sales. And so I read this one article about this family that played lawn darts all the time. They played lawn darts for 50 years in their backyard, and they continued to buy them at yard sales so that they could have a complete set, because the plastic wings would get brittle over time and break. So, but they never had any kind of an accident, not even a scratch. But they did recognize that, you know, that little kids shouldn't be playing it. It's not a sport for little, it's not a game for little kids.
It looks like the points have, like, gotten, you know, blunted over the years. Like, you know, there's the, I guess the original one, like, looked like a dart. And then there's a picture of an old lawn dart set where the tips, like, they're long and metallic. And they kind of look like the top of an umbrella.
Hmm.
Like, they're not... You know, these don't look super pointy, but they do look like they could do some damage.
Well, there's a whole world of lawn darts out there now that are perfectly safe. And so if you have childhood memories of playing lawn darts and miss the idea, because it was – I never played it, but it does look like it's fun. And I could see how, you know, throwing those things and having them be weighted and land point down would be a fun thing. I mean, it kind of falls into the same category as horseshoes. I mean, I wouldn't want somebody to get hit with one of those horseshoes either. You know, I mean, those are they're
but
not
the
pointy.
Game has rules similar to other games that we've talked about, like horseshoes or shuffleboard.
Yeah, the idea, bocce, where you have to get it
curling
close.
Even.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it has a similar application. It is a game that you can easily adapt to playing in the backyard. But now there are plenty of them that are perfectly safe. There's even a glow-in-the-dark one, which looks kind of interesting. The ring that you throw down glows in the dark, and I'm not sure how much of the darts themselves, but they have an assortment of different kinds of tips. I have a set that maybe I'll even put it out for the plant exchange so people can throw a few darts if they want, where it's like a weighted sack at the bottom.
Okay.
And so you throw that, and there's nothing that on it that is dangerous at all. I've seen one that has like a pointed egg, a plastic pointed egg at the base.
Right. Okay.
I've seen ones that have something that look like an umbrella at the base, as you described. So there's all different kinds that you can get that you can throw and have the same what would you call it? MO, modus operandi,
yes,
would be the same approach, but without any injury likely to happen. So if you enjoyed the sport as a child or have a memory of the sport, that you can, there are ways to play it now. But Jared, I have to tell you my favorite way that I saw during the research for this is a game called Flickin' Chicken. Have you seen that?
I have heard of that.
You've heard. Well, there was a guy who invents games. That's what he does. And he went to a game conference, convention, something like that. And when he was there, he saw an entire bin full of rubber chickens. And he decided he had to come up with a game. So the game is that you get four rubber chickens and you get a circle and you have to throw the rubber chicken into the circle. It's called Flickin' Chickens.
Oh, that's great.
And it looks absolutely ridiculous and something that you could have a lot of fun with. Nobody's going to get hurt by a rubber chicken flying through the air. So while the original lawn darts are long gone, and hopefully no one is buying the parts and putting them together. But it has been replaced with a bunch of totally acceptable alternatives. And the way to keep score is, you have to get it as close to the center as possible. There's two ways of scoring. You get points if you get it in the center. But that's one whole set. That's how you count the score of the game. And that if one team gets two in the center and the other team gets one in the center, then they two cancel each other out and the team that got two in the center gets 1 point. And you can play it, I think they recommend 9 sets of throws, something like that. But the other way, a modified way of keeping score, is that if no one gets any in the center, you get a point for being the closest one to the outside.
That is called Handley Cup style.
Yes. Yeah. So that gives you more options. I suppose you could make a bigger circle if you had, and maybe for Flickin' Chickens, you need a pretty big circle.
You could probably improvise.
You could improvise.
Like hula hoops and garden hoses and anything you have around the house, probably.
So, but that's how you play the game, and I think if I come across a Flickin' Chicken set, I have to.
Yeah.
I mean, my chickens would want to play that.
Yes,
it's
as long as they're not the ones being flicked.
As long as they're right. Well, that would be. But maybe Goldie, who lives in the greenhouse, maybe she could be the umpire and she could be the judge because she would enjoy watching that. So, all right. So lawn darts, the old ones are gone, the new ones are here, and the newest one. Our flying chickens. All right, we will be back after this.
And now the Fox Sports New Jersey weather forecast. The morning sun will mix with arriving afternoon clouds, becoming milder today into the mid and upper 40s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a shower after midnight near 40. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a few showers, especially morning through midday, becoming breezy and warmer Sunday, 65 to near 70. I'm WeatherWorks meteorologist John Leo on Fox Sports New Jersey.
41 degrees in Central Jersey.
Their dads and sons, moms and sisters, riding ambulances, patrol cars and fire engines, driving tow trucks and maintenance vehicles. They risk their lives for our safety, and every day, up to two will be struck by a driver like one of us. And every fifth day, one will die. When you see flashing lights, move over. When you enter an emergency or work zone, slow down. It's the law. This station is part of the Beasley Best Community of Caring. Get driving safety tips at respondersafety.com or visit our website.
Brought to you by Keep Middlesex Moving, working to reduce traffic and increase safety.
Ultimate collision and repair. Beautiful bodies are our business.
If your vehicle has been involved in a collision or any type of unwanted contact, trust Ultimate Collision Repair. On Route 1 in Edison, they'll get you and your car back on the road. The professionals at Ultimate Collision Repair provide the industry's highest quality repairs using state-of-the-art equipment and cutting-edge techniques, and they vow to provide you with an exceptional, personalized service. Ultimate Collision Repair's two-year collision guardsman program will relieve the stress and out-of-pocket expenses for your vehicle repair after an accident and will reimburse you up to $500 on your covered auto deductible. It's the protection plan that gives you a sense of security when going about your everyday life. Visit them online at ultimatecollisionrepairinc.com.
Ultimate Collision and Repair. Beautiful bodies are our business.
PSE&G offers energy-saving programs and products for your home, your workplace, and everywhere in between. Count on us for everything from expert advice and professional energy assessments to instant discounts and rebates on ENERGY STAR-certified lighting and appliances. And when you're ready to start using less energy and enjoying lower costs each month, we're here to help. Visit PSEG.com/energy efficiency today.
You're listening to The Garden Show with Peggy Ballester-Howells on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. Join the conversation live. Our phone lines are open, 732-545-9282. That's 732-545-WCTC.
Welcome back to The Garden Show. We're going to go right to Milltown. Say good morning to Anne-Marie. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Well, I'm calling as the chicken advocate. I think Goldie and her friends in the backyard may be offended that you are flipping their rubber cousins.
I don't know. I think they'd get a kick out of it. I don't know. They might think.
I think they'd be like Tom Turkey, worrying if he's the next one on the line.
No, I don't. Well, I certainly hope not. My chickens are much loved and get lots of attention. I think that they might find it entertaining. But
okay.
I have to tell you about Goldie. Goldie's been awesome. She's been, first of all her feathers are grown in and she looks really beautiful.
She's beautiful.
And she has become so domesticated.
I'm sure.
I can
might be the word.
She hangs out with the dogs. The cat comes right up to her. She's fine. I can pick her up wherever she is without any. She doesn't try to fly away or walk away. She just lets me pick her up. She's giving me an egg almost every day.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, and she's but this is the part that's really interesting, Anne-Marie, and this is something I've wondered about. But you know, I get all these eggs and they're all rainbow colors, shades of blue, shades of green, shades of brown. Some are so light brown they look pink. Some are so dark brown they look like milk chocolate. Some of them are medium brown with dark brown speckles all over them. But I never know which egg comes from which chicken. You know, because they're all in the nest. I have an idea of some of them that I know lay brown eggs, but not which shade. And I know the ones in the coop by themselves, the fancy chickens, they all lay white eggs. But I can't tell you which white egg came from which hen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But with Goldie in the cage all by herself, I know those are her eggs.
Well, and maybe everybody needs a week's vacation in the greenhouse.
Maybe, maybe. But here's where it gets interesting. She lays greenish-blue eggs. And one day, I gathered all the eggs in the morning. And the next day, I gathered all the eggs at the end of the day. So it was almost two whole days that the eggs were in there. So when I got there at the end of the second day, there were two eggs. And they were different colors.
Now, see, from Goldie.
She's the only one in there. So they're obviously her eggs. And
they say must be something you ate.
It must be something she ate. And here's my theory. You know, she gets chicken food every day and water, of course, every day. And on some days when I'm in the greenhouse and on most days when I go to take care of the chickens, I'll take her out and let her be, you know, out of the cage and in the yard. And,
right.
You know, the dogs hang out with her and watch her. So I'm hoping no hawks will ever get her. But she, because she can't run away. She can't fly. She can't walk very well. So I think that there have been a few days recently when it's been nice enough and I'm working outside. Because I won't leave her outside all day if I'm not home. So,
right.
Even if I'm inside all day, I don't like to leave her out there alone all day. So, but when I'm working outside, I leave her out. So on a day where she's been outside almost all day and she pecks at the grass and she eats the bugs, I think that's what changes her egg color.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Little science project going on here.
Yes, little science project. And, of course, it wouldn't necessarily show up the next day, because the next day she would have laid an egg. But it takes a while for the egg that's forming to get out the chute, so to speak, and have the egg shell put on it. So that egg shell would be the one that was there that was laid first, was already in the process of being made while she was eating the other stuff. So that was hatched the next day, or not hatched, laid the next day, and it was of the not outside food color. And then the day after that, it was the outside food color, which was bluer. I thought that was kind of interesting, because that's the first time I've ever been sure. I see all these different shades. I thought each shade came from a different chicken, but they can vary from chicken to chicken based on what they've been eating. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, it is. Maybe she ate some blue-blooded bugs.
Maybe. Or maybe she ate some grass, like blue grass, you know, but something that had color in it. So anyway, she's teaching me a few things, and she's a very happy girl. She's a very happy girl.
Okay. You were talking about daffodils before.
Yes.
Mine on the front of the house, which the sun comes up in the east to the front, they're all blooming and they're happy. But I have ones in the backyard, which also get that sun, and they're the whiter color. They're daffodils, but they're not yellow. They're that creamy color.
Right.
And they usually bloom, you know, hands full of flowers. And I have, if I have 10 flowers back there out of maybe what used to be 50 to 70 flowers, that's a lot. And now my daughter across the street, she's got a daffodil garden that couldn't possibly harvest. She might have a dozen flowers versus 100 and some. Did something happen over the winter? Did they get frosted too soon? I don't know. We don't really. The ones in the back, I don't feed. I just ignore them. They just do their own thing. They're not doing anything this year, though.
So what
do I need to do? Feed them or?
Well, it wouldn't hurt. You know, a couple of possibilities. Is there any possibility they got mowed down earlier last year?
No, they are in Pachycandra hell. Excuse me.
So they grow up right through that. So you don't.
Yeah, they
don't
care. They're tough.
They have no need to be mowed. I have ones growing right up in the middle of the lawn, and again, I have to mark them to make sure they don't get mowed.
Sure.
So I hate to say it, but it. You may want to divide them.
Yeah, that's it. Mine and hers, she's a second owner at this house, and they were there, and they've always bloomed for that friend that lived across the street, and they've bloomed for my daughter. But I know hers certainly have never been divided, and I didn't so much divide mine as I rifled some and planted them elsewhere. I didn't do it with the intention of, I just wanted more in more places. But, So when would we divide them?
In the fall is the best time.
Yeah, it's hard to see them when they have no green leaves or dead leaves hanging off them.
Okay, Here's what you
okay, do. Hers are easy. I'll have to mark mine. Hers are easy because they're the perimeter of a flower bed.
Well,
so we put it in the fall. Hers is easy.
Well, you've heard me talk about the use of tomato cages in this application, right?
Oh, yes. I have lots of them. Okay. I can do that.
Yeah. So you cut off the rings of the tomato cages and you give
them.
And you give them 3-inch to 4-inch feet and you won't even see them. You'll hide it in the Pachysandra.
Yeah, okay.
And then
sounds like a plan.
That'll mark the areas where you want to dig for the fall.
Oh, and speaking of tomato cages, I did do that to my passion plant. I unwound it from whatever it thought it was going to do because it couldn't be outside, and I pushed a nice rusty cage in so when it's foliated, I'm not going to see shiny anything. And so there's one string that goes around the very top and a cluster that goes around below the bottom ring. So I just can't wait to get this baby outside and see what it's going to do because it's my fun thing.
Well, I cut my passion vine way back, and it's doing really well. I'm undecided as to where I'm going to put it this year. I want to move it out also. A couple of things. You remember my backyard by the greenhouse. The back steps come down, and you get to the bottom of the steps, and then you make a right turn, and you go into the door that goes into the greenhouse. But there's a gap between the steps and the greenhouse, maybe about 8 feet, maybe not even. And I have cannas in there, and I don't want to completely block it because it goes under the porch and under the steps. And the dogs like to go in there in the summertime and to like a giant doghouse. But it's butt ugly. You know, I mean, it's just ugly. And so I put an akuba in the corner. And unfortunately, that got severely damaged over the winter from the weight of ice and snow being dumped on it. We won't say how that happened. And but I came up with a plan. Yes. I happened to, when we put the addition on, we expanded the back porch by about 2 feet, just enough, maybe 3 feet, just enough to put a window seat in and a window and close it in so that when you go in, you have a place to put your pocketbook and your groceries when you're trying to open the door and place to sit to put your shoes on. And what happened as a result of that is we cut off one section of fence.
Okay.
So I'm using the fence and I'm going to attach the fence in that space so that it kind of blocks the view of underneath, but I'm leaving room on either side for the dogs to be able to get under and still go.
Okay.
And now I'm thinking of either putting the mandevilla vine or the passion vine in a pot right in front of it to grow up the fence and camouflage it even more.
Well, that's a good idea because both of them will twine themselves onto anything they can touch.
Exactly. Exactly. That is my plan.
The problem is when you want to bring that in, it's attached to a fence that's outside.
It's true. It's true, but I usually take the mandevilla to the Ocean Grove house and put it in a particular corner where it climbs up a fence and has to be unentwined. So, you know, whether I do it there. So it's something that we do anyway. But even if it doesn't grow up the fence there, if I put in a taller cage or something else a trellis for it to grow up, it would still do the main thing, which is camouflage the space.
Right. Okay.
So we're sort
of a plan.
Yeah, it's a plan. I haven't figured out which one I'm going to move out there, but one of them is going to go in that spot. I need to go to Hobby Lobby and pick up a mat. I found this really cool hook that I had that is just the right size to attach to the house and sit the fence on it. It's a hook that comes out straight and then goes up about an inch in the front. So it will hold the fence in place perfectly, but if I need to take the fence down, you just lift it off.
Oh, excellent.
So I have one of those hooks. Unfortunately, Hobby Lobby is not open on Sunday, so I'll have to wait till tomorrow to go get another one. But we will install it, and that way, if I want to put anything back there or need to access that space, because if it was camouflage, it would be a really good place to hide old pots.
Okay, call me when you're off the air and tell me exactly what you want. Hobby Lobby's 5 seconds from my house. I'll get it, and I will give it to you when I see you.
But it's not open on Sundays.
I live here all the time. I can go on Monday.
Well, we may work on that. But that is the plan, you know, because if I could camouflage it a little, it's mm-hmm. way bigger than the dogs need to get under there. But it would be a place for me to put pots and stuff. But then I could take off the fence thing and access them and then put it back. So I'm working on this, trying to maximize the use of the limited space that I have. So because I don't like them all stacked on the side of the garage. They're sort of camouflaged, but, you know, you still see them.
Last year, my friend that I met at your garden party, Anna, she gave me a passion plant that is a perennial. Now, I put it in where I know exactly where it is, and I will be interested to see if it resurfaces because it, you know, the leaves died off and you couldn't tell, and I don't think I whipped the piece out when I weeded unless it got pulled with raking leaves. But I already talked to her. She said if it doesn't come up, she'll secure me another one.
Was that a May pop?
I don't know. What do I know?
Because I have May pops that Nancy gave me at the Ocean Grove house. And it comes up. And last year, you know, it was so funny because it grew through the hydrangea, the vanilla strawberry hydrangea. And several people asked me if I wanted to get that weedy vine growing out. And I was like, no, the hydrangea is holding it up. And if I had to pick between the hydrangea and the passion vine that has the most bizarre, spectacular flowers you've ever seen, I'd take the vine, not the hydrangeas are a dime a dozen. The passion vine is not. And then I would say, and then I would take these people when I saw them at another time and bring them over and say, see the flowers? This is blooming now. And they would go, people would take pictures. And yeah, so, but it does have a tendency to come up in strange places. It doesn't necessarily come up where I thought it was going to come up. I don't know if it's spreading from the roots. Oh, and I talked to somebody about the passion vine, somebody that the guy that I had on the air interviewing last week that has the passion vine seeds. And he says that the fruit is really good. Now, the fruit I had was somewhat tasteless, but mine produced a bunch of fruit the last couple of years.
Yeah,
but
that's what Anna said about, because when I talked to her about the one that I have in the pot, which is actually from Nancy, she said, does it get fruit? And I said, no, just flowers. And so she said, oh, no, this one gets fruit. And it's not actually her plant. It came from her neighbor's yard. So she doesn't know a lot about it except that it comes. So, when I talk to her again, we'll have a little conversation. Maybe she's listening to us now anyway.
Well, here's the thing. He said that it probably was not sweet because the front yard of Ocean Grove gets a minimum amount of sun. I mean, it gets a lot of sun for Ocean Grove because it faces south, but there's houses right across the street, there's a tree. There's an oak tree there, too. So where it's growing gets some little bit of sun, but not sun all day. So if I were to plant one at Tiny Farm, I could put it in a really sunny location, and maybe if it got enough sun, the fruit would be sweeter. So I may pursue that this year. And if I see more than one.
That's the only one? It hasn't cropped up someplace else?
Well, I thought it had completely disappeared, and it popped up in the hydrangea. Believe me, I didn't plant it in the middle of the hydrangea.
No, I didn't think so.
It came up on its own, and I wasn't going to mess with it because it was doing good. But I actually have, believe it or not, a headboard up against the house behind the table and chairs. And I planted two of them on either side of the headboard in anticipation of it climbing up the headboard.
Right.
And somebody weed whacked them. We won't say who. And
That gremlin that comes in the night really has to get off your property.
So I thought it was gone. And then the next year it came up in the hydrangea. So it doesn't always, plants don't always make sense. So it came up and I wasn't going to mess with it. And right in the middle of the bush, nobody's going to weed whack it either. So it was safe there. So I left it there. So there may be more. I will keep an eye out to see if there are more coming up this year, in which case I will try to move one if I can find one or divide it or something. But But that's the idea. But I want to grow one in a sunny location to see if the fruit is sweeter.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, my dear.
Great. Talk to you soon.
I will talk to you very soon. All right, you have a great day. Give that hubby of yours a hug for me.
I will. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. So we need to take a break. All right, the number here, 545-9282. Outside the 732 area code, it's 1-888-545-9282. We'll be back after this.
And now, the Fox Sports New Jersey weather forecast. The morning sun will mix with arriving afternoon clouds, becoming milder today into the mid and upper 40s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a shower after midnight near 40. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a few showers, especially morning through midday, becoming breezy and warmer Sunday, 65 to near 70. I'm WeatherWorks meteorologist John Leo on Fox Sports New Jersey.
42 degrees in Central Jersey.
Fox Sports Radio New Jersey is taking your nominations for the 2022 class of Teachers Who Make Magic. We all know a teacher who goes above and beyond every day, both in and out of the classroom. So nominate your teacher at our website, foxsportsradionewjersey.com. It's brought to you by Crystal Auto Mall, Toyota, and Mazda. Come see why the difference is crystal clear. Magyar Bank, celebrating 100 years of being simply magnificent. Value City Furniture NJ, with a large selection of in-stock furniture and mattresses. Find a store near you at New Jersey's very own ValueCityNJ.com. The New Jersey Department of Health reminding you that children ages 5 and up are now eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. Teachers Insurance Plan of New Jersey, where we believe that getting quality and affordable car insurance is not something educators should ever have to worry about. NJEA, proud of New Jersey's public schools, which are number one in the nation. And FoxSportsRadioNewJersey.com.
Aaron Kitchen and Bath Design Galleries are open to help with your remodeling needs. In-store appointments preferred, but walk-ins are welcome too. To find a location near you, visit AaronKBDGallery.com. Can't make it to the store? Not to worry. Aaron Kitchen and Bath Design Gallery has 360-degree galleries of all locations and is offering virtual appointments too. Visit AaronKBDGallery.com to find a location and to make all your kitchen and bath dreams come true. That's AaronKBDGallery.com.
Davis Agency, located at 865 Mountain Avenue in Mountainside, New Jersey, is the place to go for all your business commercial lines of insurance. If you're a current client, you already know you have the best working for you. But if you're in the market and want someone who is there looking out for your business needs and that of your employees, then make sure you call Davis Agency. They will tailor a plan to meet the needs of your company, making sure you have what you need for peace of mind. Call them at 908-233-8040. Or for more information, ardavisagency.com. For a price you will love and the service you deserve.
Fox Sports Radio New Jersey is taking your nominations for the 2022 class of Teachers Who Make Magic. We all know a teacher who goes above and beyond every day, both in and out of the classroom. So nominate your teacher at our website, foxsportsradionewjersey.com. We'll honor all the winners with an awards dinner in the spring. It's brought to you by Crystal Auto Mall, Toyota, and Mazda. Come see why the difference is crystal clear. Magyar Bank, celebrating 100 years of being simply magnificent. Value City Furniture NJ, with a large selection of in-stock furniture and mattresses. Find a store near you at New Jersey's very own ValueCityNJ.com. The New Jersey Department of Health reminding you that children ages 5 and up are now eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. Teachers Insurance Plan of New Jersey, where we believe that getting quality and affordable car insurance is not something educators should ever have to worry about. And FoxSportsRadioNewJersey.com.
The new Talk Radio 1450 WCTC, the voice of Central Jersey. The Garden Show with Peggy Ballester Howells.
Welcome back to The Garden Show. I'm Peggy Ballester Howells, and And I'm here with...
You're here with Jared.
Until...
Till 10 o'clock.
Till 10 o'clock, yeah. So we got about another 20 minutes or a little less to answer your gardening questions. We have four open lines, so if you call, we'll get you through right away. The number is 545-9282. Outside the 732 area code, it's 1-888-545-9282. So I do want to say that I'm going to go down to see Mel at Madden's after the show today. I need pansies, and she said she would have pansies this week. So I want to pick up a few flats of pansies. I have a number of containers, some in the Garden of Ancient Ruins, that I want to have, you know, blooming with pansies for the plant exchange. So I want to get them in the ground as soon as possible. They should do nicely. If I get them today from Mel, I might wait till after this unseasonably cold weather in the next couple of days passes, because I don't want them to get injured, although pansies are really tough. But the problem is that they've been greenhouse grown now and are not super. If they had been planted in the fall and had been there all winter, they'd be fine. But if I just stick them in the ground now out of a greenhouse, they might not like those cold temperatures. So I might wait till we get past that. But even so, I want to pick them up and have them around. So, all right, we're going to go to South River and say good morning to Andy. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Piggy, happy spring.
Yes, it's definitely spring. Things are springing out all over the place. But I want to ask you if you made any decisions about your dead tree.
Well, you know, I'm going in front of the South River Shade Tree Commission.
Oh, well, that should be interesting. What?
Yes, and it's Wednesday, April 6th, and I am going to drop off my little application. You know, it's the Plant One on Me application, but it's the closest one. And in the comments, I'm going to mention what I've got here, which is a dead tree right along the curb, and it's cut down to, I'd say, probably about 10 feet. And there's a whole lot of ways we can go here. I just want to make it clear to the South River Shade Tree Commission that instead of just cutting this dead tree down to the ground, I'd like to pull a Peggy and do something really original and compelling and eye-catching. And it's up to them, I would guess. But, you know, I'm going to need to have a good case so that they don't look at me like I'm on chemical extraction.
Well, I think if you can come up with a plan that you can present to make it a work of art instead of, you know, just a dead tree. Even just as a dead tree, it's pretty cool looking. It's a fascinating looking, lumpy, bumpy, holy looking thing. It's pretty amazing, which ties in with what I'm doing is I hope to get my totem pole done before the plant exchange. Which is, you know, I have a dead tree. My dead tree is boring compared to your dead tree because mine's just a straight, perfectly symmetrical looking 12-foot tall tree stump. But I'm leaving it, and I'm going to take off the bark, and I'm going to – I have TJ bought me for Christmas last year, or maybe it was my birthday, a very small handheld chainsaw, like small, like a 6-inch blade, just a little tiny one, and battery operated, so that I could do a little carving on it and make it into a totem pole. But I also want to add things to it. So we will be working on our dead trees simultaneously, Andy.
Well, regrettably, because this dead tree is literally where I would surmise it's the borough of South River's property. Though there is not a sidewalk, just so the Garden family knows, this is right up against the curb. So if I were to do something to this tree and there were any issues or the borough had a concern about it or the neighbors weren't happy about it, I'd be, as the kids like to say, SOL. So I got this one chance to go in front of the powers that be And hopefully they will appreciate the fact that I'd like to do something that will enhance the community and not something that will be a distraction and or jut out into the street.
Well, I wish you luck, and I hope to that you will keep me posted on whatever it is that you decide to do, because it was something that had great potential. So I hope that you, you know, find a way to make it work for you and that the town is cooperative. Actually, I mean, if it's their tree and they came and did the pruning, you'll be saving them the job of taking it down the rest of the way if you do something with it. So,
well, you had suggested the idea of doing hanging plants off the body of the dead tree, and I'm thinking something like that might be more amenable to than me trying to describe something to them that might be a little hard for them to understand.
Makes sense. I mean, between the holes in the tree and those plastic planting bags where it's a plastic bag that you hang on the tree and you fill it with soil, but it has holes in it so that you can tuck things in lengthwise so that it's completely covered. And they wouldn't stick out into the road at all. They'd be almost flush against the trunk. At least the backside would be flush against the trunk. And then you could put all kinds of interesting things, even some viney things that would hang down. And it would really make the thing look really interesting combined with planting in the existing holes. I think it would be amazing. I think it would be absolutely amazing. So I'll keep my fingers crossed for you, Andy.
All right, Peggy. Thank you so much for all you do, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too. Thanks for calling, Andy. All right.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, next is Sal from South Plainfield. Good morning, Sal.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. I have the daisies. They come out in the fall. And I didn't cut them down last fall. And I see now I got shoots coming out that are green and shoots that are dead. I don't know whether I could just cut the whole thing down or I have to try to get around the dead branches, the dead leaves.
Okay, I'm assuming that if it's a fall-blooming, large, white, daisy-like flower, that it's something called a Montauk daisy. They're very common, and they bloom in the fall, and they're pretty easy to maintain. You can cut them back now. Certainly cut off any of the branches that look completely dead. I would get to it sooner rather than later because the new growth is already coming out. And you want to encourage the new growth to come out further back. So you don't want it to spend too much energy making new leaves that you're going to cut off. So, but yeah, you can prune it. And it's actually a good idea because if the branches are too long, they have a tendency to get weighted down when it's in bloom and becomes like a pancake. The branches.
If I cut them all down, that might kill the getting flowers in the fall.
No, no, it'll still bloom. You can prune it now, and it'll still bloom in the fall. But
it'll come back up again.
It should, but don't over prune it. Leave some of the green buds there. You know, the ones that are closer to the center of the plant, and take the dead branches out completely, and then the longest branches, cut them back, but try to leave some buds so that you've got, you know, some signs of life there, and it'll resprout from there.
Okay. I have one other question. On my fig trees, I didn't feel like covering them last year because the big fig tree, I never cover that. But the last 2 years, it never died back, but I see there's no buds on it now. So most likely, I'm probably going to have to cut it back in the spring.
Well, I have a number of fig trees. One that grows in a container, and that's fully, you know, leafed out. It's going to have more leaves, but every branch has leaves on it right now. But that was started in the greenhouse.
Okay, because I have one like that. I know what you're talking about.
But I have one in the yard that faces southeast, and I was working in that bed yesterday, and I saw no signs of life in that one yet. But I don't think it's dead. I think it will resprout. So what you need to do is take a close look at it and take a pair of hand pruners. And if you think some of the branches are dead, snip a couple inches off and see if it's brown inside or if it still looks like it's green. And if it still looks like it's green, well, then you can leave it, and hopefully it will resprout in time.
Normally, I do that sometime in May. I notice we're in the middle of the tree. I got five fig trees out there, the big one and the other four that I rooted from the big one.
Okay.
And one I rooted like 20 years ago. But it was getting to be like 10 feet tall. I said, that's getting a little too big for me to cover. I said, I'm going to see what happens over the winter. But I guess we had a bad winter, so this year it didn't come back like it did the last 2 years.
Well, it wasn't a real bad winter, but it wasn't a good winter for fig trees. The problem with this winter wasn't so much that it was a really bad winter, because most of the winter, I mean, we didn't even have any winter until late January. But when winter did come, it did get very cold. And so the problem with that is that the plants were not used to it. They didn't have a gradual acclimation to colder weather, like a more traditional winter is. It gets colder and colder and colder and gets really cold in December. It never did that. It stayed warmish, and then it got really cold, like somebody threw a switch, and the plants were not used to it, and they didn't. Anything that was borderline sensitive took that hit pretty hard. So, but that doesn't mean that the branches are dead. It almost certainly means the overwintering fruit buds are gone, so you're not going to get an early crop of figs. But it very well, the branches may all very well still be alive. But the only way to know for sure is to take a snip here or a snip there and see what you've got. You could also wait until the branches on its own, and that would also give you a clue. But if you want to, if you know that now that there are branches on it that are dead now, you can prune it now. If you know that some of the branches are dead, so you can investigate and find that out if you want, and you're not going to lose.
And the two in the flower pot, I guess I have to wait till like May to bring them out.
Yeah, I would wait a while. Mine's going to stay in the greenhouse for a while. Of course, you know, if they're not too heavy, I don't know how big yours are. Mine is still manageable. I can move it myself if I have to. You know, if you get a week of weather predictions where it's going to be on the warm side, you can leave it out. You know, this week we're going to have temperatures in the 20s. No way. You know, there's no way you can leave it out. But, you know, we're getting, as time marches on, that becomes less and less likely. So, but if you forget to bring it in when we are getting a cold snap, you're in deep compost.
Okay, I'll just wait till the end of May.
So.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that sounds good. Anything else I can do for you?
That's it.
All right, then I will say goodbye and hope that you will let me know what's going on with your figs, because you report into me on a fairly regular basis about them. But I want
I was given. I had a neighbor I kept giving figs to last year because they kept popping up so much.
You mean fig trees or figs fruit?
The figs itself.
Well, they were a lucky neighbor. That was nice of you to share. I had a few myself last year, which was good. I was very happy with my fig production, so that was good.
I had the five trees, so I get floated.
Well, last year, I think, was the year of the fig, because everybody that I know had figs last year. So this winter maybe wasn't so great, but last winter was perfect for figs. So I don't know when we'll get another one like that. But all right, Sal, you have fun with your figs, and we will talk soon, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so one of the things that I need to say here is that there's four different kinds of trees that I'm looking for. Remember me saying this before, Jared?
Yes.
Okay. So the four are a weeping Siberian pea shrub, which is a dwarf weeping tree that gets beautiful yellow flowers in the spring. I love it. It has interesting foliage, and it has an interesting shape for the winter. It's just a lovely, lovely small tree. Really hard to find. So that's one. I want a monkey puzzle tree, which is a nasty tree that you definitely don't want to ever have to climb. But it's so weird looking. It's so bizarre. I have to have one. I love it. And I want one for the yard. So that's two. The third one is a red cedar, which one would think is, you know, extremely common and volunteers all over the place. But this is a Juniperus virginiana, the botanical name for a red cedar, variety Taylor. And that's what makes it special. The variety Taylor is very skinny, grows straight up, and it would be an ideal plant to put along the fence to help hide the big, ugly building. So I had really wanted the Italian cypress, which is listed as hardy to zone 7. But everyone I talked to said it's listed as hardy to zone 7, but it'll only last a couple of years. You get one bad winter and it's gone. So I don't want to do that. The whole idea is to put something in there that's going to grow. This juniper, this Taylor juniper, is very hardy around here, very easy to grow, just needs a fairly sunny location. And somebody found them for me. So I'm very excited about that. Now, the last one is a Flushing Yew, which is very, very narrow yew bush and would be eaten by deer. So it's not something that I could recommend for people who have a deer problem. But in my backyard, I have no deer. And that one is very tolerant of lower light conditions. It will grow in full sun, but if it's not full sun, it'll do fine too. And I had a whole bunch of them at Blooming Acres. And of course, most of them burned because they were right by the front door and that all burned. But I had one that survived that was in the back, and that's still there, I assume. I don't know what they've done to all my wonderful trees there, but I haven't found that yet. But we did locate the Taylor junipers. I am so excited. I can't wait to get them. I asked for 6, and I kind of spot them around the fence, and it'll break up the arborvitaes that are there, the green giant arborvitaes. So we are making progress, Jared. This is exciting. All right. That brings us to the end of the show. Had a fun show, chatted with some fun people. I will be here next week, same time, same place. So until then, you have a good one. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting from the Davis Insurance Agency studios.
Get more than just the scores.
We are the